You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Wendy Sweet from Carolina Hard Money. Wendy, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. I hope you are.
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. So Wendy is another fellow CG member. That's a Collective Genius, which is a real estate mastermind that we're both in. And she's not necessarily an investor. She's actually a hard money lender, but has a lot of experience working as an investor and with investors. And I thought it'd be really interesting to bring her on the show and talk about, you know, how it makes sense to borrow money at high rates, you know, that are typically associated with hard money. But then also let's talk about it on the other side in terms of being a lender who's lending out hard money. But Wendy, before you even got into hard money, what were you doing? How did you find yourself in real estate?
Well, actually, my mother has been a real estate agent all her life. So we were kind of exposed to real estate in that way. As kids, you know, every birthday, every holiday, mom was gone showing houses. And I always swore I would never get into real estate because of that.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle, right?
That's right. Never say never, because yeah, that's where you'll end up. So I actually had a company called Fairman and Associates, which was a golf marketing company. I used to travel across the United States putting together membership programs and packages for new golf clubs.
Interesting.
That were opening. Oh, it was a great job for a single gal. Because I got to go everywhere, got to play excellent golf across the country, and all of it was not on my own tab, which was really nice.
Wow.
And then I got married at the age of 37 and had a baby. Mm-hmm. And closed that golf marketing company down. And I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. I had my baby at 40. And 6 months later, I'm ripping my hair out. I'd worked so much. So I got back into, I wanted to get back into the working field. And I actually, and my oldest brother had a net mortgage branch, and I thought I could give that a try. So I started working with him. In fact, my first sales call with him was on 9/11.
Wow. Holy
cow. Yeah, that's pretty traumatic to start a new career and to sit through that. That was kind of wild.
Yeah.
But it was very shortly after let me say this. The company that I was working for, of course, my brother's company, they specialized in investor loans. That was really their niche product.
Okay. Yep. And there weren't a lot of those out there, probably early 2000s.
Gosh, yes. 100% funding, stated, that even the no income, you know, please.
Wow. Yeah. And that had nothing to do with our crash, right?
That's right. So it, you know, but their best niche product was the investor. So I learned how to underwrite investor loans, and investor loans were actually the most difficult to underwrite and get closed if you were in the mortgage business. Everybody did, you know, mom and pop owner occupied type stuff, but the non-owner op was really, really the most difficult. So I learned that niche, and it was shortly after that I was calling on a company called Financial Help Services that was owned by Larry Goins. And I know you know who Larry is. He had, at the time, and this was before he even started speaking or having his own product, but he had that mortgage company, and I was calling on him and said, you know, I know that there is a local real estate investor association that I've heard about, and if I can just get my foot in the door, I know that I can get a lot of business out of that. And I said, do you know anything about that? And he said, well, it just so happens that I'm the president.
That helps.
So I'm like, thank you, God. That was pretty cool. So it was maybe a month after that Larry asked me if I'd be interested in working with him and his mortgage company. And of course I said, yes. And within 30 days, we had 20 loans in house.
Wow.
And so he fired the three people that were working for them and that were working for him at the time and brought me on and made me his partner an additional 30 days later. And we were rocking and rolling in investor loans. That's all we did. Wow. In fact, got to the point where we were doing 20 to 30 loans a month.
Wow.
Yeah, we were really doing well. And then throughout this period, all the way up until 2008, we also dabbled in the hard money end, and we kind of fell into that. When I say fall into that, it was truly by accident. I would have investors that qualified for loans, but they couldn't find a house. And then I would also have investors that didn't qualify for a loan, but they did have a house. So I started thinking how I could not only pair them up or use the guy that has the cash to help the guy that doesn't have the cash to get a hold of that house, fix it up, and then refinance it through a conventional loan. Mm-hmm. The whole reason I was doing this was so that I could get it refinanced through a conventional loan. So I was making money on doing the hard money side and then refinancing it into a conventional loan.
You were just like a bridge loan for them, basically.
Yeah, so I did that's exactly right. And that's really what hard money in many cases is. Mm-hmm. It's a bridge loan. Because they're so short term, but that was going great guns until 2008 when everybody and their brother went out of business that was doing investor products. So it got really, really difficult. We couldn't buy a loan. We actually ended up shutting down that company. And I actually went to seminary.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, you had to stop and ask yourself, okay, God, I thought I was doing everything the way I'm supposed to do it, and realized that I was off the mark. And I really, really just wanted to grow my relationship. I had no intention of really going into the ministry, maybe possibly working in the fundraising arena, mm-hmm. Nonprofit fundraising arena. I thought about that for a while, but when I graduated in 2012, Larry had started calling me again, saying, Hey, what are you going to do when you graduate? I'm like, I don't know, Larry, but I'm not getting back into real estate. Again, never say never. So he talked me into coming in with him into his business. He actually by that time was selling, training. Really, he'd written some books that are really good, all kinds of neat stuff. And at the same time, he was still wholesaling properties. He would buy them and wholesale them to investors. Mm-hmm. He had maybe three or four people that were acquisition managers. So I came into his building doing hard money, continuing to do some hard money on the side. I was doing maybe 2 to 3 loans a month, not a lot. And then pretty much fell into running his wholesale division. Within 3 months, I was running that company for him again. And it ended up doing very well for probably the next 3 years. It's still doing well. However, my hard money company really started picking up. And we also changed the direction in our lending practices. We weren't really doing the smaller first-time investor type housing where the after-repaired value might be $100,000 or $120,000. Our product was increasing. And when I say that, what I mean is where the after-repaired value is more like a $300,000 to $600,000 home, the rehab money is greater. We were paying our investors 15%. People who were loaning us money to loan out for them, we were paying them 15%. People were literally throwing money at us to put out.
Sure. Yeah. 15%. That's solid.
Exactly. And since I had been in the investor arena for so long and being able to see how conventional underwriters were underwriting these conventional loans for investors, you know, I understood how tight you needed to be when you're underwriting hard money. And that's probably the biggest difference that that you see when people who were in the hard money arena at that time, if they went out of business, it's because they ended up having to take so many houses back. They weren't underwriting them like a conventional underwriter would do.
Right.
I was. So even during that time from 2008 all the way to 2011, I never had to take any houses back during that time.
Wow. Unbelievable. Yeah. There were a lot of hard money companies that sunk during that time.
Oh, I'm good friends with a company that took back 83 houses.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Oh,
they're still getting rid of the last few.
Oh my gosh.
But, and it's all about the underwriting that you do. So as I'm getting busier, about 2 years ago, I brought my brother. Remember my brother that originally got me into the mortgage business? He actually had shut down his net branch and was literally driving a truck. And he hated it, of course.
Wow.
And I was so busy. I really needed help because the company was growing. So I brought him in as my partner. And since he's been with me, we have absolutely doubled our business. In fact, we're at 70% over what we did this time last year. And,
you know,
a lot of has to do with him. He's a techno geek. So he really helps with the marketing side and he understands the mortgage business as well. So it's really helped. So we're a company of four people and we have a $50 million fund that we put in place it's been a year, a little over a year. I wish there were 50 million in it.
Right.
So tell all your friends I'm looking for accredited investors. And then we also have what we call a one-off lender, which is where, you know, if you gave me your self-directed IRA money, I would broker it with a rehab investor and loan that money to that investor. And I kind of broker it and service it and oversee all of that.
Yeah.
So we've got two ways that we do that. And that kind of puts me at where we are today.
Interesting. I mean, what a ride for you. I mean, and having seen so many different aspects of real estate investing, from running, you know, the acquisition side of a wholesale company to just transitioning back into hard money lending, you really know all facets of the business.
Well, it really has. And, you know, I probably have what I consider the best education ever, because not only being in the hard money business, I get to see everybody's repair list. I literally go into I go into 100% of the houses, but inspection wise, I inspect about 70% of the houses that we have. I outsource some of the other inspections that are far away because I only loan in the Carolinas, but you know, I don't want to drive 6 hours to inspect a house. So I get to go in these houses at every different step of the rehab for the draw request that they do. I get to see the quality of work. Of course, I get to see how much it costs to do all of this. And that's from the lender point of view. As in from the wholesale and investor side, I know the art of the deal because, you know, I ran the wholesale company for so long. And it's been a real blessing to have the education that I have. And, you know, I'll also say that there's lots of piles of poo out there to step in as an investor as a lender. And I have stepped in just about every pile. So I've had to replace a lot of shoes. and it's been a really good learning experience. And really, my goal is to make sure that other people don't step in the same piles I did.
Yeah, talk about an education. You do any idea how many houses you've lent on over the last so many years?
Oh yeah, for lending wise, we've loaned on over 1,000.
Wow.
Purchase wise, you know, in the wholesale division, that's, you know, north of 1,500. So I've been involved in a whole lot of deals.
Yeah, no kidding. And so, what struck me is you still inspect every property before you lend on it. Yourself,
yes.
Personally?
Yes.
Wow. It's
either me or my brother will go into it. But yes, and it's really important for me to see those. And that's why I'm only in the Carolinas, because I want to be able to see all my properties.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important for me to see the whole thing, because when I'm underwriting a deal, I'm not underwriting it just from a lender point of view. I have to think like the investor too.
Yeah.
And my goal, a lot of times the investor doesn't always think like an investor. They're looking at it on the buy side that, hey, this is a great deal. But really, you need to be looking at it on the sale side.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Can you get out of this hard money loan? Are you going to get stuck?
Exactly. So I want to see what's surrounding the house. I want to feel the drive when I get there. I want to look at what's going on in the town if I haven't been there in that city before. Mm-hmm. I really want to get a feel for what I'm looking at and what they're looking at. I want to just see what's going on in that market. So it's really important for me to put my eyes on that property. And two, you know, it's not my money that I'm lending.
Sure.
And I look at everybody else's money as if it were my parents. Like my mother can make a nickel squeak. And I make sure that I'm going to protect that money like it's my parents' money.
Sure.
Because, you know, Christmas would be very uncomfortable.
Now, have you guys, I mean, you guys have obviously a fantastic track record. Have you had to take any houses back?
Absolutely, we have. We've done over 1,000 loans. We've had to take 18 of them back.
Okay. Yeah, that's still
in
a really
every
good
case,
percentage.
Gotten them in deed of lieu and a deed in lieu of foreclosure. So I've never had to go through a complete foreclosure up until the last one we just took back. And that foreclosure actually, it may not have to go through because I believe the guy has gotten financed out of it. In fact, I should know in the next day or so whether that's happened. So I'm hoping I'm going to be able to continue to say I've never had to do a foreclosure.
And he didn't want to just give the deed in lieu. I guess he's intent on refinancing, it sounds like.
That is correct. That is correct. And you know, what I've found is that in every case but two, the lender has actually made more money because of being able to take the house back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm 35 years a real estate broker. So I also market that property. You know, we finish it if it hasn't been finished it, because I'm retaining all the rehab money in my account. So we have the money to finish the house if it's not already finished. And then I put it on the market and sell it. And then we, of course, the lender gets everything that's owed to them. And then we split the profit with them. So,
wow.
Yeah, in every case, they've made money off of that, with the exception of two. And I've had one borrower lost, I think, ended up losing $6,000 on one deal. And on the other one, it was about $11,000.
Yeah, but still, out of 1,000 houses, to only lose that small amount is pretty darn good.
Well, and that's true. But then the lender that lost the $11,000, he's made so much money in the past 6 years from lending that it was just a blip on his radar screen.
Yeah, it's funny because I say the same thing to we use a lot of private lenders in our business, and I tell them the same thing. If I get hit by a bus or something happens, and you have to take a house back, you're actually going to be in better position to make more money than just lending to me, because, you know, we buy these things so inexpensively.
That's right.
You can actually cross your fingers that I get hit by a bus, because it wouldn't be such a bad thing to take the house.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the two deals that the lenders did not or did lose money on, those were both in areas that at this point we would never lend in that type of area again. You know, it only made us tighten up the areas that we lend in,
right?
Meaning, you know, the houses are just not selling as quickly. And in those cases, they could have sat in the deal and waited until that price would come, but they were both more interested in getting it sold so they could put their money to work again.
Right. Right. I gotcha. So are the Carolinas, are they foreclosure, or are they judicial foreclosure states or non-judicial?
One of each.
Oh, okay.
I have one of each.
Which is which? I'm just curious.
North Carolina is the judicial state.
Okay. So how long is that? If you had to take a house back in North Carolina, what does that look like?
It really is about 6 to 9 months. People say it takes a year.
Okay.
But it really doesn't take that long. You know, the one that I said that we went through all the way through the process, and here we are at the end, and he may end up getting it refinanced. That when we have had everything in place and ready to go within 7 months.
Interesting. Okay.
And in fact, we've put the hearing off that finalizes, hey, it's yours, take it. We've put that off for 30 days. I'm sorry, 45 days to give him an opportunity to get that refinancing in place because we don't want his house.
Sure,
We
right.
don't want his house.
Yeah.
And you know, when he does get this thing refinanced, it's going to include the attorney fees, all the late payments that have not been made, renewal fees, everything that he owes. We're only in this house at 62% loan to value.
Well,
So
wouldn't be so bad.
yeah, so even if it doesn't go through, it'll still be a great profit for the lender in the end. They'll get all their money back and then some.
Yeah. So let's talk for a second about, a borrower, an investor who is using hard money. Maybe talk a little bit about why an investor, even a seasoned investor that's turning a lot of houses, making a lot of money, would use your hard money.
Well, for the most part, it's to leverage the money that they have. Investors that are savvy are doing more than one deal at a time. They tend to, the ones that I see that are making the most money, if it's not their full-time job, they are in one deal, in the middle of rehabbing one deal, and in the middle of negotiating the next one. So that when you're finished with the first deal and don't have it sold yet, or you're getting really close to the end, you're at a position where you can take your contractor and put him right on the next deal. And the only way that you can do this is to leverage your money so that they're taking as little out of pocket up front so that they can do more deals. The other reason why people would want to do that is, for some reason, if they run into problems in the rehab, they knock down a wall that has termites they didn't know would be there. So there ends up being a lot more cost in it. They need to have the cash to take care of those issues to complete the house. So if you've put all your cash into the house, where are you going to get the money to take care of what's missing?
Right.
What you didn't expect. And I don't know about you, Ken, but I don't think I've ever seen any deal go smooth as silk.
And they never do. You're exactly right.
They don't. There's always something that's going to pop up, and you need to be prepared for that. The loans that we do, the majority of our buyers can pay cash for every deal they do with us, but they choose not to because they want to have that cash available for other deals that are coming up. And that's both in the investors that are rehabbing houses or the ones that are doing new builds. We do a lot of infill financing where
Oh,
people
yeah.
are going into the real hot city areas, downtown areas, knocking down the 2-1 mil houses and putting up a 2,500, 3,000 square foot house. So we do a lot of that as well, because those guys, the
Interesting.
2 to 12 houses a year that they're building, they can't get bank loans.
Right. It's true. Or if they do, it's probably a small one. They found one bank that'll lend to them, and it's tricky.
It can only do one at a time. See, when banks are lending to the small builders like that, they have to take, and I believe it's 7 times the loan amount, and put it in reserve in case they have to take that house back. So they're having to put that money in reserve, so much money in reserve, it doesn't make sense for them to lend to those smaller builders.
Right.
So it's not that the smaller builders don't qualify for it, they do. It's just that banks would rather loan all of their money but out instead of putting it all into reserves. So
Interesting.
yeah, it's pretty cool.
So now, what do you typically charge a borrower in terms of points and interest?
Well, and people always ask me that. First of all, as a borrower, you need to and as a lender, you need to understand that points and interest is different all over the country. It's all about supply and demand. Like New
Totally.
York, you're going to pay 8 points and 18%. In Florida, you're going to pay about 3 points and 10%. In California, I think is more like a 3 point and 10% state. We charge 5 points and 13.75%.
Interesting.
And we've been charging 5 points and 15% for 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we just reduced our rate from 15% to 13.75 because there's stupid money out there now. And stupid money is hedge fund money.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all into lending now. It's like they took that same model where buying houses, and instead of buying houses, they're putting it out there on the street as debt.
That's exactly right. And, you know, they've got all of these investors in their funds that they have to pay.
Yep.
So they don't care really what they're lending on, how much it is, where they're lending. They just want to get an interest rate coming back so they can pay off their investors.
Yep. Yep. And what sort of down payment do you typically require?
We don't require a down payment.
And
we do charge more than most people in our area. You can get money down here in our area for, let's say, 3 to 5 points and anywhere from 12 to 14%.
Yep.
So we're a little bit on the high end for us, but we do that because we actually loan more money. We loan up to 70% of the after repair value. You'll find people that will do anywhere from 60 to 75%. I would never go to 75%, but we loan up to 70%. And the only thing that we require that you bring out of your pocket would be the points to the closing table.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the closing costs. You cannot fold your closing costs into our loan.
Oh, interesting.
Now, the reason we don't require any money other than the closing costs, which include the points, out of pocket is because we want our investor to have his cash available should he run into any issues.
Right.
That aren't held in our escrow fund. We do hold, all of our rehab money in an escrow account, and we release in arrears. As the work is completed, we do an inspection, and then we release based on not only what's been done, but what's left to do. Because we're always, as a lender, you always think in the back of your mind, you know, how much is it gonna cost me to finish this house when I have to take it back? Mm-hmm. Not if, you always think about when I have to take it back.
Absolutely.
And nobody, I hope nobody, but I haven't had anybody taking out a loan and thinking, oh, I'm not going to pay them. You know, there are bad things happen to good people. So as a lender, you should always be prepared for that scenario.
It's an interesting, I like the fact that it's potentially 100% financing, which is why you're able to charge a little bit more. But I'm thinking from an investor's perspective. I mean, for me, it's the same thing. I'd rather leverage myself up to 100% and pay a little bit more on the cost side rather than having to tie up, 20% of my own money in capital for one or two less points. I mean, I can see why you're crushing it right now.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing too, people think, oh my gosh, it's 13.75%. But you know, that's a 12-month period.
Yeah.
Now our loans are only 6 months. And okay. Length. Mm-hmm. So really, what is that interest rate? How many payments are you really going to make?
If you go 6 months, I mean, there's probably a lot of people that turn it in 4 months.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And those are the clients that we want. Those are the areas that we want to be in where they're getting in, even the new builds where they're knocking these houses down and building a new house. They get in, they get it done fast, and they get out. And these houses that we do the new builds on, you know, that are in the downtown areas, they sell before they get them finished.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
You know, we're talking Raleigh, Durham, mm-hmm. Charlotte, Charleston, South Carolina. These are all areas that are really, really strong in the millennial market.
Mm-hmm.
And the millennials want to live downtown. They want new, but they want it to look old.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, and they want to be able to pop on the bus or the light rail, whatever it takes to do the quick trips here and there. They don't like having to drive around in their car to get everywhere they need to go. So these downtown areas are just hot, hot, hot. And it just so happens that the Carolinas, Charlotte especially, has the highest millennial population of anywhere. So, you know, we're capitalizing on that.
Yeah. So are you doing the same terms for financing on new construction?
Yes.
Are you? Wow.
Yes, we Very sure cool. are.
Interesting. Now let's talk about from the investor's perspective. So you probably have a ton of investors that are lending into your business. What does that look like for an investor?
Well, if you're in our fund, of course, you can only be an accredited investor to get into that. And at this point, we are paying, we our last quarter, we paid out 11.48% on the money,
Nice.
which, yeah, that's good money. They don't have to do anything but look at it in their bank account.
That's
And
right.
they're what they are is they're actually a member of our company. So, if there is a foreclosure or a take back that happens within that fund, it's now spread over several different people, and it's truly a little blip on the radar screen.
Yeah.
And again, like I said with the other properties, when we go to resell one that we've had to take back, there's actually a bigger profit, and that again, that's going to go into the fund. Now absolutely, we haven't had to take anything back in the fund. It's only being a year old as well. Now, on the other side, what I call the one-off, these are people who are not accredited investors, and we're very limited as to who we're taking in on that side now too, because like I said, people are basically throwing money at us on that side. We were when we were charging 15%, they were getting the 15%. They get all of the interest rates. So that 13.75% goes directly to them.
Gotcha.
And we service it. When I say that, we send out the payment reminders. If they're late, we call them. We're inspecting the properties. We underwrite the loan. We do everything necessary to take care of that loan. All they do is check their bank account. So it's a really a simple situation for them as well.
I guess the difference is that maybe there's a little bit more inherent risk because you're not spread
Because
over a pool like
that
a
is correct.
fund.
And then the other thing too, when your loan gets paid off, your money goes back to you.
Yeah.
So it may be another month to 3 months before we place that money again.
Gotcha.
So although you were getting 13.75, it's not really going to come out to that because you're going to have a few months where you didn't get any interest.
Right.
And the reason why that's happening is because we have the fund and we're going to get that fund money out first.
Yep, that makes sense. Yeah, it's we call it keeping your money in play.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Interesting. So you get the points, service the loan, obviously originate the loan, and your investor gets all the interest. That's a great split.
That's correct. And yeah, I think so. And again, if for some reason we had to take the house back, and we resold the house for them, not only would they get all their money back, but they would get half of that profit as well.
Yeah, that's true. There is a potential upside. Not very often, but it's out there.
Right. I had a guy that did a testimony for us at a local RIA club, the one in Greenville, South Carolina. And they ask investors to do a shout out for anybody that they've worked with that may be a vendor. And we had a guy who just happened to have made 22% on his money from the renewal fees. And that's something I haven't talked
Oh,
about.
okay.
Once you go over 6 months on a loan, there's a 2% renewal fee that the rehabber has to pay to renew the loan for another 3 months. And that all the renewal fees go to the investor, the lender investor. So he ended up making, and this is when we were at 15% as well, but he ended up making 22% on his money over a year and 3 months. So he was a happy guy.
It's funny. I do some lending out of my self-directed account through Mike Zlotnick, a buddy of ours at CG. And I love it when somebody goes past their the loan term because the fee starts stacking up. I know that's
Oh,
horrible,
yeah.
but that's where you really start getting solid returns on your money.
No doubt. No
That's
doubt.
funny. So Wendy, you've been in this business a number of years. You've seen obviously a ton of deals. Is there one deal that stands out to you as your best deal ever?
I think all of them are my best deal ever.
Oh, that's a new one. Okay.
I can tell you that we just did a deal for someone. In fact, I want to throw out two to you. I'd like to throw out a good one and one that will make you step back and really question why you do what you do. The best one that I've gotten to be involved in is a deal that we recently did where the investor bought the house for three, no, he paid 250,000. He ended up borrowing 319 on it to fix it up. That included everything.
Okay.
He sold it for $728,000
Jeez.
before he finished it.
Jeez.
Yeah, that was sweet.
Was that a new construction deal or what was that?
No, it was not.
Man.
He took it, he now he added some a footprint. He added to the footprint. But that was one of those downtown millennial deals that it's just amazing. Now I have another guy that when we did the appraisal on it appraised for $435,000. He ended up taking 8 months rather than the 6 months he had hoped for to finish the house, but he had it sold 30 days before he was finished with it, and he ended up selling it for 650,000.
Jeez.
And so that just tells you that in the right area, time can actually be on your side.
Absolutely. Yeah, you might pay a little extra in fees, but if sometimes it does make sense to even wait to put a house on the market a couple months when you know the market's gonna be hot. Like for whatever reason, our business right now, we're listing houses right now that have just become available, but I know I'm just shooting myself in the foot because it's such a horrible time to list a property right now. You know, between Thanksgiving and Christmas, it's almost worth waiting 2 or 3 months for, the market to heat up to list the property.
February 1st. If you wait till February 1st, you're going to get a much bigger, a much better traction on what you're trying to do. In
Yeah.
our area, anyway, in the Carolinas, you usually would want to wait till February 1st to put it on the market.
Yeah. I should take a tip from you and just wait and sit on some hard money for another month or two, but then probably get it sold a lot quicker and for higher dollar.
Exactly. And now the one of the worst deals I've ever seen, which I thought was a really great education, is a deal that the investor was 2 days from having the house complete. 2 days. And it was a $225,000 house. The contractor left the house with the water on and the heat off. And
No.
it went to -6 degrees. It never, it's that cold around here, but it just happened to be that cold snap that we all experienced last year. The pipe on the upstairs outside wall of the bathroom burst. And the only reason we knew it burst is because the neighbors called, because they saw our Carolina Hard Money sign in the yard. The neighbor called and said, "There's water pouring out the front door and the windows are all steamed up."
Oh my gosh.
So, of course, the insurance company, there's $70,000 worth of damage done
Holy
to
cow.
all of the new rehab, and the insurance company did not cover it because the contractor left the water on and the heat off. So that's a good learning experience for anybody that has insurance. You should all have insurance on your house, but if you're working in the winter, even in the summer, if you leave the water on and those pipes burst, the insurance company will not cover it.
Really? It's funny. I feel like we've had the same thing happen on our houses before where a pipe freezes. I think, and I feel like we've had insurance had to pick it up once. I think that's one of the few times we ever had to actually have an insurance claim, and it was for the exact same reason. But I had no idea that they had exclusions around the fact that you could leave water on and they would exclude it because it got below freezing. That's really
Yes.
interesting.
Yes. If it bursts because it's freezing and you didn't have the heat on, they won't pay it. Yeah,
Oh
we
my
found out
gosh.
the hard way.
Insurance companies, man, sometimes I swear they find every stinking loophole to avoid paying
That's
a claim.
exactly right. That's why they're called insurance.
Yeah. $70,000 in damage, man. I feel for that guy.
Yeah, it was not pretty.
Oh my
was not
goodness.
pretty. And and to have a hard money loan on top of that, it's
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. But I mean, that's you just really need to make sure that you're really dotting the I's and crossing the T's, making sure that your contractor does what they're supposed to do, and read your insurance policy.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Make sure you know those exclusions.
Exactly.
So, Wendy, I'm sure there's people listening, either maybe they're looking to borrow money in the Carolinas or they're an investor that likes the idea of maybe putting some money in a fund. Give us an idea. Where can we point them to get in touch with you?
Well, you can always reach me at Wendy at carolinahardmoney.com.
That's easy.
And also my phone number is 803-831-2856. And you can check out our website, carolinahardmoney.com.
carolinahardmoney.com. We'll put that on the show notes, folks. By all means, Wendy is a top-notch hard money lender. If you're looking to maybe put some money from your self-directed retirement account into play, I mean, 11.4% in a fund to me sounds phenomenal. By all means, reach out to her. Wendy, again, thanks so much for being on the show. This was great.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Hey, Deal Farm Podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini reminding you that the name of this podcast is Deal Farm for a reason, because I want to help you do more real estate deals. If you're looking to buy a deal in a certain market, let me know about it. I've got contacts all around the country. If you're just looking for hard money or private lending, I do a lot of private lending and would be more than happy to work with you. If you're looking to partner on a deal, maybe it's your first deal or second deal and you need a little help, I partner with people all the time. Whatever it is you're looking for to fill in the gap to get started in real estate investing, I can probably help. And if I can't, I'll point you in the right direction. Again, I'm here to help you become successful in real estate. Go to our website, dealfarm.net, onto the Contact Us page. That'll go directly to my inbox. I will reach back out to you, set up a time to talk, and I'll do whatever I can to make you a success. Thanks again for listening to The Deal Farm. We will see you on the next episode. Take care.